In our midst, we have States SA. We have called them to this meeting because we have been interacting ourselves as portfolio committee and the department. And every now and then, when they release their states, you'd find that as agriculture, we ask ourselves questions that. We are a sector that's supposed to be, in terms of the mandate by the NDP, we're a sector that actually must make sure that there is food security in the country, and we must create jobs. And every now and then we ask ourselves, as the stats shows, that we still have people who are food insecure, people who cannot access food. And we just felt it's important to invite State SA to come and actually share with us where are these people, so that we have invited our provinces. Together we can look at how can we access these people and make sure that we make our contribution as a sector and eradicate the challenges that we have as the NDP mandate us to do. So I want to take this opportunity to acknowledge the apology of Honorable Gqebekhulu, who is attending another meeting, might join us later. Today is the sitting of Parliament, but we have applied to have the whole day meeting. So, but you know, our Parliament, this nowadays, we vote every day for everything. So immediately if you heard siren, we have to adjourn the meeting to go and vote. So we vote for everything. But if there is no voting, we'll proceed with our meeting until we finish our agenda. I've already received an apology from the HOD of Gauteng, who would leave us to another meeting but come back, and the MEC of Northwest has indicated that they are receiving the visitors in the province, so he has to go back early. I'm now going to allow the State SA to share the presentation with us. The team from State SA, you're welcome. And unfortunately, the screens are not working, so honorable members and should use our document.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair. My name is Ntabise Makgatha. I work for Statistics South Africa. My colleague next to me is Mr. Idani Magwapa. He works for Statistics South Africa as well, responsible for agriculture statistics. We also bring apologies for our SG. He is in New York attending the UN Statistics Commission, so he requested us to come and represent him in this meeting. So my colleague Itani will be making the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Morning, everyone. Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of Parliament. This one. Minister, Deputy Minister, MECs and colleagues. I'm going to present on the activities of the SA with regard to agriculture and food security service we should do and other studies we should might be having. And we'll also try and outline what we think can be done to improve going as a country going into the future. we've been conducting a census of agriculture since the beginning of the last century. I think about 1914 around there, I'm not sure about the date. But then, and also in terms of agriculture, this was one of the industries which was surveyed regularly. At that point, it was surveyed almost annually. That is, every year there was a census for agriculture. But over the years, the frequency had decreased to a 5-year, which was there when before Freedom Day, that is 1994. And the last census of Kunshan agriculture before 1994 was conducted for the year 1993. But it's important to know that this census didn't cover the whole country. For example, we found that the activities which were there in the former homelands, maybe in certain urban areas, were not covered. So smallholder and subsistence agriculture was never covered. And even now, as a country, we're not in a good position to cover smallholder and subsistence. So it was, although it was a census, but not all the activities in terms of agriculture was covered. Then since then, State SA has conducted a census of commercial agriculture in 2002 and 2007. And this was with the initiative from the National Department of Agriculture, which is now DAF. That time it was still NDA. And for that, the NDA did finance or fund the 2002 census of commercial agriculture. But when it came to the 2007 one, it was funded by both State SA and NDA. And I think you can see 2002, 2007, so we're supposed to have a census every 5 years. But the one of 2012 didn't take place because it was not funded. But another thing which we've done is State SA to try and cover the gap, we conduct an annual survey of agriculture. And this survey, just like the censuses, they are based more on the SARS tax registers. That is the income tax register and the village tax register. And we use these sources because there's no other register of farmers in the country. That's why we had to resource to go to SARS to come and get the register to conduct the census. And presently, as State SA, we are in talking to DAF to conduct a census of commercial agriculture for 2017. We hope that maybe before the end of this financial year, it will be finalized and then we can conduct that census starting from April this year. But in the meantime, as State SA, in a effort to better understand smallholder and subsistence farming, we put some questions in the census 2011 and also in community survey 2016. So because I think you'll agree with me that most of the farming activities, even those which you call commercial, takes place at a household level, except for a few enterprises which are in agriculture, which are corporates, but most of it is within the household. So you might find that a farmer is registered for tax, but the same farmer is also a household. So we did include those questions in the census 2011 and community survey 2016. I won't talk about the importance of agricultural statistics. I think the people in this room, they understand it better than us. I'll talk about the agricultural enterprises. That is from the census of commercial agriculture. Between 2002 and 2007, we realized that the number of farms decreased from 46,000 to about 40,000. But since then, we have not had any information for the past 10 years. So probably there could be another reduction, which is probably what most people who are involved in agriculture indicate, that there should be a decline in the number of farmers in the country. But this can also point that probably the farms are getting bigger, not necessarily that there are fewer people involved, so that there could be fewer people involved, but the farms probably are getting bigger. People are acquiring other land to farm. And also another issue to indicate is to say that between 2000 and 2007, the employment also dropped. So the farms are getting bigger in terms of land size, and also agriculture is employing fewer people, commercial agriculture. And I think I'll just, as also you can see, the gross farming income, of course, it increased with inflation, and the capital expenditure stayed more or less the same between the between the 2 years, and the market value almost like went up almost 90% between the two periods. And at the same time, the farming debt went up by 28%. The next slide, which shows the provincial statistics, is just to indicate which one of the provinces has got a large share in terms of commercial agriculture. And you can see that Free State has quite a number of farmers or commercial farmers, followed by Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Northwest. And the least in terms of commercial farmers, as we'll expect, is Gauteng, and there's also Limpopo and Mpumalanga. So they don't have a lot of commercial farming activity. So the next one is where we're talking about agricultural households. That is, these are households which, when we went to them in 2011 and 2016, indicated that they've got some kind of agricultural activity taking place in their household, or they're involved in agriculture. Between the 2 years, in 2011, there were about 2.9 million households who said they're involved in agriculture. But in 2016, the committee's survey, we estimated that about 2.3 million households were involved in agriculture. But it's also important to note that for 2016, when we asked people about farming, especially in terms of crop, we were asking them the activity for the reference year 2015. So we suspect that one of the reasons could be that in 2015 there was the issue of drought which experienced as a country. And some of the people who are involved in subsistence agriculture decided not to plant because most of them they depend on rainfall, so they decided to save the seeds for maybe for the following season. And this decrease of 19% was mostly in provinces of KwaZulu-Natal, followed by Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Northwest, Free State, and Mpumalanga. So that was a big decrease. And looking within a province, we found that the province with the highest number of households involved in agriculture was KwaZulu-Natal, followed by Eastern Cape, followed by Limpopo. So this is looking at the numbers, but if you had to look at the proportion within a province involved in agriculture, the highest number was in the Eastern Cape. But even look at the proportion, it's still the same province, it will still be KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo in terms of having highest proportions of households involved in agriculture. In terms of the population group, most of the people or the population group with the highest proportion of households involved in agriculture was Black African, followed by white, and colored, and then Indian. So Black African was about 16%, and white was about 9%. But the overall population in 2016, about 16% of the households were involved in some kind of agricultural activity. Then looking at the head, looking at the head of the households involved in agriculture, generally in South Africa, looking at the whole country, you'll find that there were more males than female involved, although the percentage maybe is about 2%, 48%. But looking at the provinces like Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo, there were more female-headed households involved in agriculture than in the other provinces. So more females were involved in agriculture than males in those three provinces. Then looking at the issue of some socio-economic conditions of the households involved in agriculture. One of them, we said, let's look at the use of toilets. The use of pit latrines, we found that in these households involved in agriculture, about 55% they use pit latrines. And compared to the overall population, which is about 26%, which means that these households probably they are worse off than the general population in terms of access to toilets. And also looking at the source of energy for cooking, and specifically we look at the wood to say what proportion of households are using wood as a main source for cooking. For the overall for the country, about 80% of the households use wood, but for these households we found that 25%. They're involved with, which means they are still the same pit latrines, they are worse off than the overall population. And looking at the 2.3 million households involved in agriculture, where do they farm? And we try to look that per population group. We found that for black African, 86% are involved in backyard farming, so this is probably some kind of subsistence farming, that is for their own consumption, mainly for own consumption, and 6.4% they are farming on farmland. And the other percentage is a bigger one, is communal land, so those are the main ones. But when it comes to the white population group, we found that 59% are farming in the backyard, probably farming for their own consumption, but 30% they are farming on farmland. The colored and the Indian is more or less the same, as not very different from the black African. Maybe the black African might be having more access to communal land than the other two population groups. So we also asked them, what is the main purpose of the household being involved in agricultural activities? We found that 44% said they are involved as a main source of household food. So which means that if they don't get involved in agriculture, they could face some challenges in terms of having food for the family. Then about 37.5% said it is an extra source of household food. So they've got food, but maybe they need to be involved or to plow to be sourced so that they can also have enough food for the family. And as a main source of income, about 5.7%, that is about 6%, were involved. So these are the ones which you can see, they are probably households which are mainly commercial or also smallholder to a bit of extent. But there's also another percentage which says an extra source of household income, which could also be some smallholder agricultural activity which they are involved in. But all in all, 81% are saying that they are involved as a main source or extra source of household food. So we also look at the activities which they are involved in. For most of the households are involved in poultry production, owning a few chickens, followed by livestock production, vegetable production, grain and food crops, and so on. And you realize that if you add these numbers, there will be more than 2.3 million, that is the households involved in agriculture in 2016, according to the community survey. That's because a household can be involved in more than one activity. So, when it comes to the livestock, in the community survey 2016, we asked the household to indicate the number of livestock they have, especially for goats, cattle, sheep, and pigs. So we're able to come up with some figures on that one. But if you look in terms of livestock, the province which is dominant in terms of livestock or households having livestock is Eastern Cape, in terms of both goats, cattle and sheep. KwaZulu-Natal is also dominant in terms of goats and cattle. And Northern Cape is dominant in terms of sheep. But if you look at the two provinces, especially the one of Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, although they've got a lot of households involved in cattle or livestock farming, this is usually at most of these households, they are involved at a subsistence level, where you find that they own about 1 to 10 of each type of livestock. Then the ownership of the livestock by population group, if you look at all of them, there's looking at 2.3 million, is mostly black African, which probably makes sense because also the population of the country of South Africa is mostly black African. So you'll expect it to have. But this ownership of at a substance level between 1 to 10 number, in terms of the number. In terms of food security, if we assume that South Africa has got or is a community of 100 individuals, you'll find that in 2006, about 28 individuals were poor, living in extreme poverty below the food poverty line. That is 28%. In 2016, there was a reduction, so this dropped to about 25 individuals, so only a difference of about 3. The next slide is a good one because it shows a slide. It shows that 2006, it was at the food poverty line was at 28.4%. Then 2009, it went up 33.5%, maybe because of the economic recession in the country and globally at that time. 2011, it went down to 21.4% of the household who are below the food poverty line. By 2015, that figure has gone up to 25.2%. So those are the figures which we have up to that point. The next slide looks at the vulnerability in terms of hunger, both of an individual and the household. It shows that if you look on the timeline from 2002 on the vulnerability in terms of hunger, both for the individual in terms of the household, it has gone down. I mean, it was about 29.3% and it's about 13% at the moment. But if you look at the food access only started measuring that in 2010. So that's why the time series only starts at that point. You find that in 2011, there was a big drop, but since 2011 up to 2015, it has remained more or less the same. And the same applies for both the household and also for the individual. So the next slide, which shows a map of the country, is showing these are the results from the community survey, which was conducted in 2016. And the darker the municipality, it means that the more the issue of the topic applies to it. And this one is talking about households that ran out of money to buy food in the past 12 months. And you can see that there are some in Mpumalanga, then KwaZulu-Natal, and so on. But also bear in mind, in some of the provinces are more populous or got more population than others. For example, KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape has got much more compared to Northwest. So although Northwest can be have a municipality which is very dark, it might be that fewer people are affected than the other provinces or municipalities. We also asked the percentage of households who skipped a meal in the past 12 months. We found that the highest number was in Eastern Cape, followed by Northern Cape, followed by Northwest, Free State, Mpumalanga, and KwaZulu-Natal. Those provinces were above the national average, which was about 13.3%. And then Limpopo, Gauteng, and Western Cape were below the national average in terms of skipping the meal. Then this is the same thing, looking at provinces, those run out of money. I think this one probably is the same. Northern Cape, number one, followed by Eastern Cape, Northwest, and so on. Just in closing, what are the things which maybe we can still do, or what does the data tell us? What we can see is that most of the households who were found to be involved in agriculture in both Census 2011 and Community Survey 2016, they were involved mainly for the purpose of countering food security, either at a household level or at an individual level. But also the other things which we lack as a country, like I indicated at the beginning, when we do the census of commercial agriculture, we use the tax register as a base, which has got its own challenges. But ideally, as a country, we should be having a farmer register, not only covering crop production or livestock production, but also covering the other activities like forestry and fisheries. Because this can be used for us to do proper surveys of agriculture. As long as you don't have farmer register in the country, it always becomes a challenge to say, how do you have proper statistics or good statistics for agriculture? And the commercial agriculture census was done in 2002 and 2007. And we were supposed to do it for 2012, so it was not done. But that means that there's now a break in time series. We don't know what has been happening in 2012. And probably it also affects the issue of how, as a country, we're able to plan properly and develop appropriate policy. So probably going to show must try and avoid breaking the time series. But looking at the food security, there's been a slight decrease in the number of households and individuals affected by food insecurity. And another survey which we don't have as a country as yet. Because what Census has done is that when it comes to food security, we've tried to piggyback on other surveys, the community survey, the census. But we have not had a comprehensive survey just better understand food security. And this could be important to do regularly, maybe at least every 3 years or 5 years, so that at least we've got a better understanding and we don't lose sight thereof. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CSA. Honorable members, that is the presentation. You are welcome to interact with the presentation, Honorable Paulson, Honorable Feltana, Honorable Papa, and Honorable Stein, and Maloyi, and Kruger. As noted.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. And thank you for the presentation. I think it's no secret that Stats SA is one of the departments that my party has great regard for, and I think going forward it's going to be even more important as we make sure that the land gets returned to its rightful owners. So with that said, I'm a bit disappointed that we don't have a history of the commercial agricultural land and as to how we can see if there's been any shift from the status quo. On slide, I don't know, 8, you spoke about farming units being reduced from 45,000 farming units and to 39,000 or 40,000 farming units. So I'd like to know what amount of those 6,000 units that's now changed, what amount of those have been incorporated into other farms, and what is laying unused, and what is happening to it? I think that's a more pertinent question there. So, you know, it is one of the things that's the big concern about land is that some own too much and others own nothing. So it's very important for us to know those figures so that we can take the proper action. I also noticed that on your next slide, in the Western Cape, the market value of assets, so I don't know where, if this is the value of the land, but it seems the highest value of market value of assets is in the Western Cape, and you have less participants in those assets. So I'd like to know what is the ownership of those market assets, and or the average ownership of that 44 billion rands worth of assets. How many people own it? Last question, Chairperson. You also, you know, I'd like that you break down participation in agriculture in terms of not just working on a farm, but as to who own that farm, the productive means. Okay? And I'd like to have it, and it's going to be very important because it's going to have to be an annual thing, so that we can't wait for 10 years for ownership patterns to change. We're going to have to monitor it annually. Okay? And the public out there knows we've made a commitment to return land to its rightful owners. Okay? And the public needs to know whether we are living up to that commitment. You know, we don't make promises in my organization. There's a commitment. We are going to return the land to its rightful owners. A promise is something, okay, I'll do it when I want to. That commitment means I start working on it immediately. So we'd want to know that land ownership patterns in agriculture will be changing ownership. We also want to know that when that ownership changes, that the new owners would get the support that will not drop the productive means of that land. That will continue. Okay, so those are the challenges that the department has, but the Stats SA, your critical role that you play in this country is going to be even more critical when it comes to the issues of land and especially agricultural land. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Fultana. Can we be relevance to the presentation? I'm asking you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, I'm referring to Honorable Fultana. Honorable Fultana.
The old adage says figures don't lie. That was true until KPMG came on board. I hope that your books are not audited by KPMG Stats SA. But we'll check on that a little later. Question one. You say farms have gotten bigger. What is the ownership pattern that is emerging in terms of race? You know that we've just started this big debate on land ownership, so this question becomes very relevant, especially when you link it with what will be my last question of the five. Next question, slide 11. What are the reasons for the reduction in household farmers? And what has been the impact thereof on food prices and food security?
Last one.
who produces, did you say this is four? I thought I was still on two. Che?
No,
I've got only two. Che? Sorry?
Question on one. I was reading the question. There are four that we have asked.
Can I repeat my question, sir? So we've got a common understanding.
Yeah.
My first question is, what is the ownership pattern by race?
Oh, you've not asked the KPMG?
No.
Oh.
No, it was just
a
remark. It's not a question.
Okay.
It's not any question. So I'm busy with question number three.
Okay.
Thank you. Who produces more food between whites and blacks in South Africa? Number four. That was based on slide 14. On slide 19, of these various classes of farmers, who produces more food for sale? We've got those that are doing it for leisure, those that are doing it for food security and so on. Who produces more food for sale? Lastly, on the Eastern Cape situation, where Eastern Cape is reflected as having being more active when it comes to livestock farming, what are the constraining factors that you say, although the Eastern Cape is top of the tops when it comes to livestock farming, it's mainly, you know, for subsistence. What are the constraining factors? I'm glad that even the relevant MEC is here with us on this day. Those are my five questions, Chair. Thanks very much for allowing me to clarify my situation.
Okay. Honorable Kapa.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I think I'll only have three or two questions. One, on slide 7, there's a relation to the production, which is high in KZN involvement. Production involvement is high in KZN and Eastern Cape. Now, I would like to have a linkage between this figure and food security. That is my concern, that is that, for instance, in KZN, you can find that it is possible that many people are involved in this production, and yet maybe they produce sugarcane, which may not be guaranteed for food security. Not unless it can also be explained that what they get from sugarcane production can easily be converted to something that relates to food security, that is in those two provinces. The other one will be in relation to the high number of women involved in production, especially in the city. I would like to find out whether my assumption is correct that maybe the migration of men having to work in the cities, has it had a role to this, or is it a matter of enthusiasm from women in those areas? And the last one would be, we also have these provinces where we have high numbers of livestock farming, and we have been clarified that also this livestock farming, especially in the Eastern Cape and in the Eastern Cape, they are for subsistence. I would also like to get a clarity that how effective is this able to relate into food security, because sometimes if a peasant keeps five or three head of cattle, if maybe they keep them for 3, 4, 5 years, does that actually at some stage have a contribution to their food security, or they keep them there for a long time as a part of tradition? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Maloy. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, I think my concerns would be mostly on the fact that we're flying blind. The information that we have is old. Nothing against Stats SA. I think we need to ask the question, and I'm not sure if it's fair to ask you, but we can also ask the department for their later response on how far are we. If I remember correctly, there was something that we were discussing to put into the budget regarding getting funding, and I think that was the discussions during 2016 to get funding to do a proper agricultural household survey, so that we work with that. It doesn't help we all ask all questions here and wonder, and the fact is we don't know. Chairperson, so if we can maybe just get an update on how far are we to get funds to do a proper survey of agriculture so that we can all work from the same basis. And if we may maybe get some kind of indication of what the cost would be to do a proper agricultural survey, the cost of something like that to be so that we don't work with, you know, information that is not maybe correct all the time. Chairperson, my next concern is, and that was something that I asked for, and I was hoping that we will get more input on that, but I'm not sure, so maybe I can ask the representatives from SA. My concern is, if we look at the slide with the people with not food or not access to food or money to buy food, because they're not always the same thing. Sometimes it's because people are poor, even if they have access to land, and sometimes it's different. I was trying to get some kind of idea. If people access to land helps with access to food, because if you look at the provinces where a lot of people are hungry, that's slide 29, it's also more our rural provinces where most people do have access to land in certain areas. So I'm trying to see if there's something that we are missing as agriculture when people do have access to land, but it doesn't help the food security situation. And someone asked the question about KZN, then maybe farming with sugarcane. And although people then have access to land, it's not helping with access to food. So, and that's why I think it's important that we do have both of those things that we measure, if, you know, food insecurity and not enough money to buy food. Even then, if you farm with sugarcane, then for that, we're taking that example because KZN is shown here. It still doesn't help you with access to food. So do you have stats available like that so that you can supersede basically access to land and the areas where people are experiencing hunger so that we can see if there's a correlation or not and do we need to do something from our start? Then, Chairperson, I just, the last one, wants to understand this thing on slide 3, and I know there's a lot of debate about that. And I think it's about the number that's thrown around by to say that we have 38,000 commercial farmers in South Africa. Many people use that as a number of the number of commercial farmers in South Africa. And if I look at the number 3 on slide 3, where it says Stats SA conducted both the 2002 and 2007 on the VAT return and tax registers. So I have heard people then said that's the number of commercial farmers paying tax. So there might be more. Do you have some kind of idea of how many people are falling outside of the bracket that we can't find? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Maloye.
Chair, I have two questions and a comment. The first question is that, you know, many, many years ago, you were conducting your census on a yearly basis, and it frequently decreased over the years to 5 years interval. Why did it decrease to 5 years interval? Is it because of budget constraints, or what was the situation? The second question. You have been in discussion with the department since 2017. Yeah, since 2017 to conduct a census.
At what stage are you? Now, Chair, these are the only two questions that I have that I think are relevant. Now, as it relates to others, I'm not going to pose questions, and I'll tell you why. You know, the last time you conducted a census, it was 2002 and 2007. Am I correct? And then after that, there was no census and so on, and you are in negotiations. So like what our staff is saying, it means the information that is before us, it's outdated. And it will not assist members of parliament and the country to assess as to what is happening in agriculture, because we are in 2018, we are not in 2007. We are not in 2007. That's why I won't ask you questions about 2002 and 2007. They are irrelevant. We'll be wasting time. And I'm also going to appeal to you, because I know more often than not, when officials addresses members of parliament and we pose questions and you don't have answers, you simply answer, you try to be creative. And you don't say to members that because we did not do this work, we don't have answers. We are constrained and so on. So I'm going to appeal not for you not to be creative, because I've realized that members have raised a number of questions that are supposed to be talking to issues that are relevant today, and we have not done that. So I'm just saying, don't be creative. If you don't have answers, you must simply say you don't have answers, because you have not conducted this work. You are still waiting for the department to agree with you that you must do the census. Even the survey you conducted, it's also outdated, the community survey, because that's the only thing which can be the latest information, because at least it's 2016. It's not even 2017, it's 2016. So everything that is contained here, I can't entertain it at a personal level, so I only have those two questions. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I also want to echo my colleagues about outdated statistics. It's useless information, you know. What do you call it? There's always a saying that say, rubbish in is rubbish out. So, unfortunately. But, Jay, allow me just to ask two questions. On page 10, we talk about slide number 20. I just want to know small fisheries and the fishery sector of agriculture, where are they? Is there any statistics around that? And also the forestry, because a few pages later we talk about poverty and the access to food and all that, but surely those industries also allow households that's in that, for instance, forestry, surely they receive income and have access to food. So my problem is, are we looking at the bigger picture? Because a lot of vast areas of South Africa is taken up by forests. And then the last question, Chair, is cooperatives. You know, for the past 4 or 5 years, government's strategy was towards cooperatives, and a lot of money was spent or is spent on cooperatives in land reform, cooperatives in agriculture, cooperatives in small business development, spending a lot of money, and all the departments are spending a lot of money in cooperatives, and 90% of those cooperatives are in the agriculture business. I mean, whenever you ask, you know, the department, how much, you know, where's this project? You will always see it's some sort of a poultry farm or a small holding or vegetable gardens or whatever. So my question is cooperatives, those people working as members of the cooperatives and registered as members of the cooperatives, which is sort of formal business, are they part of this household survey? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Before they respond, I think I must clarify one thing that State SA is giving information that they have. We cannot say it's useless or name it. It's upon us as members that because we are the ones that pass plans and budgets, means that it's an indictment on us that we are passing the budgets that does not have the basis for planning. Because if this information is outdated as it is, and we are passing budgets out of the outdated state, it's a problem. So I think it's, for me it's very important. It's not useless information. It says a lot on us. State SA?
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. My colleague is going to respond to the detailed questions in terms of the survey. But in general, I wanted to address issues about the instruments that we use to get this information that we are presenting here today. And also that will talk to the issues that were raised about superimposing some of the data and the challenges that might exist. So what Itani presented is information from two different, actually three different surveys, one based on the business register which we source from SARS. And as he already mentioned, the challenge there is that ideally, when you want to conduct either a survey or a census, you need to have a frame from which you will say I am measuring or I am going to collect the information from. So the challenge that is there right now is that we do not have a farmer register. So the information that is presented here, it's limited to what we get from SARS. And the limitation, as correctly pointed out, is that yes, you will have other farmers that are outside that boundary, either and they don't meet the threshold for registering for tax, and therefore they are not there. So that's the challenge, and it remains as such for commercial agriculture. That will be breached when we do have a proper farmer register. And I'm happy that in the discussions that SSA and DAF are having, one of the key issues to address is that of developing a farmer register over and above the conducting of a census of agriculture. On the household size, on the household side, let me also point out to the challenge, which is, let's just say we don't conduct sector-specific surveys unless those are coming from the specific sectors and they are funded. So in the absence of that, that's where we then piggyback on the surveys that are there. It's the same. For instance, I'll make examples. Department of Health will come and they want a specific survey to measure their own issues. Then they will fund that and say, status A, you have the expertise to conduct surveys and therefore conduct a demographic and health survey for us in South Africa. The Department of Transport will come and say, we need to understand transport and therefore here's the money to conduct a national transport survey. So for us to provide sector-specific statistics, we depend a lot on the collaborations with the sector departments, and that is why we have a national statistics system component within Statistics South Africa that really goes out to the different departments and try to negotiate and canvass for that kind of thing. So on the household surveys, in the absence of having a specific agriculture survey to do that. We then piggyback on the annual general household survey, but this is where we get the food security questions. But that has its own limitation because we can only get national and provincial estimates, nothing more than that. To get to municipal estimates, we then use census and the community survey. What is the challenge? A population and housing census is only 10 years. It has a 10-year interval. So is the community survey. In fact, the community survey was there to try and bridge the 10-year gap in the census. But you will also appreciate that a census, as it has its own limitation as an instrument, because it is that time when we want to understand so many things about the country. And so, as an instrument, you can only get a limited number of questions into the questionnaire for the census. And hence, some of the questions that are being asked now, it is questions that we'd love to have, but for the census, as you look at the magnitude as well, it can only take so many questions. Then you can take the others.
There was a question on the issue of the ownership of land, or the history thereof, to say who has been owning what at what point and so on. As they say, we are not able to answer that question, and probably will never be able to do that. I'm not sure, but probably it could be the function of having those kind of information on the land register, which is not part of us, so we're not able to answer that one. The one of the returning the number of farming units from 45,000 to 39,000, ourselves can only speculate that there could be acquisition. But of course, we don't know what is the... We're not able to answer the question on land use in the country. So probably also it's got to do with the land register of the country. Western Cape probably is got to do with the types of farms which are there in Western Cape, the market value, than which are there in the other provinces. So probably people in Western Cape grape farming, they've got grapes, they've got this. Maybe it's the type of which might be having a higher value than the others, or maybe the size of the land. But also, let me also explain that in the 2007, we did try to collect from the farmers themselves the issues in terms of ownership. For example, the race, what the population group of the farmer, were not successful. And probably even in the future won't be successful using the census of commercial agriculture. Maybe on the other one, in terms of the households, were able to be successful. So successful in the sense that you find that that question is not well completed by most of the farmers. In terms of the land size, even that one is not able to collect it from a survey. So those kind of variables like race, size of land, and so on, ideally you should have them on a register so that even before, when you design the survey, you know those ones and you know your territory. But if they're not there on an administrative register, it's very difficult in some of the questions for people to respond. And there could be a reason why land and race is difficult to collect in the country. Then the issue of who owns the farm, of course, we cannot tell you in terms of the race, the gender, and so on. Who produces more food, black and white, we can't see. Because, like we say, the same for the same reason. What are the constraining factors in terms of developing, understand the livestock farming or agriculture in Eastern Cape? As they say, we're not allowed to comment on that because the policy environment, the policy people, I think there are people who can comment in this room better than ourselves. Ourselves, our job is to make sure that we provide quality statistics for the country, and we don't get involved in the issue of the more women involved, more women-headed households involved in agriculture in the Eastern Cape and Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal, it's probably got to do with the men migrating to the cities and females being left to head households. But you cannot, that's probably the reason why. The issue of funding, as they say, we've been in discussion with DAF, and as we've been indicated by my colleague, we've agreed that going forward, in terms of priorities, to have a farmer register for the country and also to do a census of commercial agriculture and offer that on assist. The cost of a proper survey, Honorable Chair, I'm not able to say out of from my head what could be there. We're not able to commit what could be there. But a proper survey, probably you're referring to the one which says cover both commercial, smallholder, subsistence. But before we can do that, we need to first have a proper farmer register which can be used for that. Access to land and food security relationships, as they say, we're not able to answer that one because we don't know who's got access to land. There's no register in the country which tells us who's got access to how many hectares of land, we have got what. We don't know. All commercial farmers, hopefully they'll pay tax and they'll be registered for SARS and we'll be able to do a census of commercial agriculture. The decrease from moving from annual to 5-year surveys, Honorable Member, this was somewhere in the beginning of the last century. So by 1994, it had moved long ago to 5 years. So I can only speculate. Maybe agriculture at the beginning of 1914, around there, it was the most important industry. That's why it was surveyed. It was the first one to be surveyed, the industry. Maybe as years goes by, they were doing other surveys of agriculture, not necessarily census, but we don't have that kind of information to say why could that have been discontinued. But on our side, we would like to have a census of commercial agriculture every 5 years. But on the other hand, and we also have an annual survey of agriculture which we conduct every year. The last one, I think we published the results last year in November for 2016. But that one is mostly financial because we want to make sure that our GDP estimate is well estimated. We don't have situation like in other countries where you can end up revising the GDP by quite a big number. The advanced stage, the decision between DAF and status say we are at the stage of the MOU. We are discussing the memorandum of understanding between the two of us. The issue of aquaculture is the same. There's no register of people who are involved in aquaculture farming in the country, so you are not able to do a survey of small fisheries or aquaculture because there's no register. We need to have that to be able to do a proper register. Cooperative status, ourselves, we don't look at cooperative. We ask whether you're a household or a business. Of course, a household can be part of a cooperative, a business can be part of a cooperative, but we will not know, so we don't measure into the cooperatives. I think I've covered more or less the question. Okay.
Thank you very much. You know, the issue of the register, Minister, Joe Khoboko, when he was still the DDG for food security, he came to the committee and says they started the farmer register. He has finished two provinces. They are finalizing the process. Now there is no farmer register. So, you know, the information that you give it to us, department, we need the information to tell the story of what is happening in the sector out there. And those people who have listened to that meeting where you were told that the register is in the process of being developed in 2016, today in 2018, there is none. There is no farmer register. So I just wanted to remind Mr. Joe Khoboko that when we're still the DDG, you've told us that there is a farmer register. Today you are exposed, there is no farmer register. which is a very interesting that as we're going to deal with the APP, we would have to understand the basis of the planning of the department. If you don't have stats, you don't have baseline, there's nothing. How do you plan? Then how do you make your contribution in line with the NDP? So we have to look at that at the right time when we're dealing with the planning. And Honorable Paul said there is an audit report, land report, done by Rural Development, which shows who has land, who has not. Honorable Filtana might have the copy because he's serving in both committees. So you can get the copy. I think it might be in the files of Parliament. So I think let's proceed to other presentation, Honorable Members. You want to follow up Honorable Filtana?
Yes.
And Honorable Mandela?
Thanks, sir. My fourth question...
It's a follow-up question on the question that you think they've not answered. No new question. I can only recognize Honorable Mandela. Yes. All of you, I'll give you chance to speak if you think they've not responded to your question. Honorable Sultana?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. My fourth question was based on slide 19, where you've got different categories of farmers, leisure, food security, and commercial. And my question was, of these classes of farmers, who produces more food for sale?
Thank you, Chair. It's just also for clarity, I now understand why we can't do a full census and you can't give me a budget. But can you maybe give me an indication what it will cost to do a full farmer register? You work with these kinds of things. It's some kind of basis for, so that we know what amount are we talking about to do a full farmer register at least.
Honorable Maloy.
As usual, Brian, it's not a follow-up, it's a suggestion. I can come at the end.
Okay. Honorable Mandela.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to everyone, in particular our new Deputy Minister. Welcome to you. Chair, I also want to express appreciation for the presentation by Stats SA. I just wish to know, Chair, we see in ongoing research the decline in farming enterprises or farming units. A document or research paper written and presented by Professor Cousins actually indicates that since 1994, approximately 10,000 black farmers have joined farming enterprises. One don't see those reflected in statistics. It also indicates that approximately 250,000 households have benefited during this particular process, Chair. And I'm just wondering why those kinds of stats are not incorporated or in these kinds of ongoing presentations, Chair. I'm not quite sure, maybe there's different instruments that are being used, Chair, but what we hear is that there's absolutely no growth, there's no emergence of any new farming entities, which does not correlate with the reality. If one looks at land reform that have taken place since 1994, yes, it may not be at the extent that we wanted it to be, but yes, indeed it has taken place, Chair, but it needs to be encapsulated in these kind of research. Thank you very much.
Okay. As you respond, Department 2017-18 budget, which you are about to conclude the budget. In your presentation, you have indicated the budget for agri-census. So, and SA is still talking about MUO. MOU, yes. Which the budget is ending in March. Is it March? Yes. 17-18. So, can we get clarity how these things operate? Why is it like that? You can respond and the department will add.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 19, yes, it is possible to get more information on this in terms of doing a cross-tabulation of who are the people that are involved or that indicated these items as main purpose of involvement, but we don't have those statistics at this present. We can make them available because it needs further analysis for us to do a cross-tabulation by age, by population group, or whatever it is required in terms of more information on that slide. So that we can provide later. Ma'am, on what will it cost to have a full farmer register? Let me explain it this way. The difficulty of Statistics South Africa being involved in this and doing this is that any data collection that we conduct, we cannot then divulge the individual information. So that will in itself render that farmer register not usable for many other things. The one thing that we can do as SSA is to support the Department of Agriculture, and those are the discussions that we are having right now to say how do we support them develop a farmer register, because once we develop it, we have the SES Act does not allow us to divulge the information of the individuals that we can only divulge that information at aggregated levels. And you're spot on, Chair. This is the part where we'd request the department to assist us in a more comprehensive answer. In terms of the question that you asked, Chair, about the report from Prof. Cousins, this is what we are saying. The stats that we have in terms of commercial agriculture, it is really based on 2002 and 2005. 2007. Beyond that, from Statistics South Africa side, on commercial agriculture, we have no new information until such time that we conduct another census of agriculture. That's the time that we can then say this is exactly what has happened. Other than that, we can speculate on what has happened, whether the number of farmers has increased or not, but it's really pure speculation. The direct answer would come from measurement that is based on us conducting a census of agriculture. So I would be unable to respond to the comments that you made because we have no knowledge of the source of information to make those statements. The same on the number of households. What we know is at least for the instruments that can give us information at municipal level, which is the census and the community survey. This is what we know as of 2016, that we have seen a decline in terms of households that are involved in agriculture between 2011 when we conducted the last census and 2016 when we conducted the last community survey. Thank you, Chair.
DG, we want to give Joe the mic first and tell us where is that register that you told us that he has.
Chair, at that point in time, a unit in our department was attempting to develop a farmer register. They started with two provinces. At that point in time, Chair, the idea was to use extension officers as information collectors on the ground. But we met with difficulties in the sense that extension officers have their own job descriptions at provincial level. Therefore, they could not be totally at the disposal of the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. And the reason why, Chair, we wanted to make use of extension officers is because we did not have enough budget, you know, to develop a farmer register. So we opted to use the extension officers, but we experienced those difficulties, and the project therefore didn't go very far from that. That's the problem that we experienced at that point in time.
I'm not sure what you're saying. On DG?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Minister, DM, MECs present, and colleagues. There are two questions, and I'll also touch on what Ndata Kwabako just responded on. The first question was based on the allocations. The allocation in terms of the census for the agriculture is 241 million over the MTF, with 90 for this financial year, 100, and then F1 for the outer year that we are having. We haven't been able to spend that money because of the issues of discussion and serious discussions that we are having with Stats SA. Because when we had to make that transfer to Stats SA, they raised the issue to say that there is no way that this census would be credible without you having a farmers register. And the last meeting that we have had, I think it was end of January with the Statistician General, just to tie up some loose ends. What we have done is that we have finalized the MOU. Stats SA is currently looking at the areas whether it will pass their way of finalizing their MOUs so that the money can be transferred to Stats SA to assist us first with this farmer register assistance and then go on to the real work that would be on the census. Chair, I would really want to make one of the areas that is of importance in terms of this. The department, yes, made this call to say that we are busy with the farmer register in 2016. There was an amount that was set aside to deal with the farmer register, and two provinces were concluded, that is KZN and Northwest. And in terms of that, we also had almost a template in terms of how that farmer register would look like. We are currently, from a departmental point of view, through ICT, through with the processes of just the elements what would form our new farmer register, but we have allowed that process to wait for us to finally conclude with SA, who have got almost a broader view and experience when it comes to the development of instruments that can be used for credible statistics. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Maloy.
You know, Chair, I no longer know what to say. But you see, Minister, the chairperson at the beginning indicated that it is going to be very difficult going forward for this committee to approve the APP and the budget if you plan from nowhere, because you need to plan from somewhere. It therefore suggests that your officials, the DG and them, must ensure that this MOU is signed and finalized in order for you to have information. Because from the information we got, outdated as it is, from the Stats SA, it clearly shows that there is no planning from their side informed by that particular information. And they are also saying that they can't do anything without the cooperation of the sector departments. So it therefore suggests that you will need to cooperate with Stats South Africa in order for them to be able to do this work. Because next time when we call them, we would want them to give us an updated information. And for them to have an updated information, they need your cooperation. So please just make sure that your officials do cooperate with Stats SA in order for us to move forward. You know, I understand, Chair, what the Stats SA is saying, that maybe many, many years ago, in South Africa, agriculture was a priority, agriculture was important. And as time goes on, maybe other things became important and so on. I've said in the previous meeting, Minister, that all the presidents of South Africa, if you look into their State of the Nation address, the only department which they are consistent on speaking about is agriculture and the importance of agriculture. So it means agriculture is still important in this country, because without agriculture, you can't do anything. You can't even be in this meeting because you won't have food, so you'll not be able to walk into this room. So it is still key and it is still important. So we need to treat it like that, all of us. It should not be the responsibility of the president alone to see agriculture as an important sector. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just want to check whether the survey for 2017, is it not out, the household survey for 2017?
Officials, Chair, are in the final stages of preparing the survey, so it should be out in no time.
Okay.
The general household survey, I believe, yes, you are referring to.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I think we have to go back department to look at. Because we can't talk about the issue of baseline statistics for 5 years and we don't have progress. It can't be right, Minister. Minister?
Thanks, Chairperson. I think we note the concerns raised. But I think the report from the acting DG says the MOU have been done by the department. We're expecting the State SA to look at it, whether it meets their own. Therefore, it means the two should make sure that by the time we meet again, that document is signed. I don't think I think we're in that level now where we have done all the necessary work going forward. But I want to comment on one matter that Honorable Anastasia raised, comparing the decline in rural land and all the stuff. I don't think we can compare, even in terms of soil fertility, the land that was left to people, in terms of 17% was off. I won't use the language used by the previous honorable member, but was not the land that would be for agriculture. You speak of the issue of overpopulation of animals. You speak of the climate change. You speak of the cost of the imports. You speak of the fact that that land was used to be killed by oxen. That does not longer exist. But I think I'm sure we can give a report on that, because comparing the two areas, I mean, is really impossible of how much those farmers can produce, given the barren area sometimes they have to work under. And that is the history that we're from. And it links to the issues why so many women are in farming. You go back to all the wars, how blacks were moved from the land, how they were forced to work for other industries.
and leaving therefore the work to feed the family to him. It's a political matter, I don't think it fits in here. But it is a place we can engage into.
Okay, Minister. I think you must just note that we the budget that we have approved for this census agriculture, it's ending in March, and you are still talking about the Memorandum of Understanding, which is a problem, because you are supposed to have, when we budget for a particular financial year. So means that the 90 million that you have budgeted for this financial year was that for the memorandum. That's what you are telling us. That 90 million was only for that memorandum, because the work has not started. You are still agreeing on how you are going to work. So we have to change the pace if we want to be relevant as a sector. We have the Soico PTY, which they wanted to come and share with us what they do. But unfortunately, my secretary has done a mistake that you can speak the whole day. So in this parliament, we don't have that. I'm sorry. You have only 30 minutes to present. So I hope you can summarize to 30 minutes your presentation. Ma'am, there is a seat even up. You can come when you present, if you don't have the seats around here.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I would like to make use of the opportunity to thank the committee for allowing us the opportunity to be here this morning to introduce ourselves. With me here is Mrs. Nono Jonathan. She's the production manager at Soikro. Next to me is Mr. Tim Woodendown. He's the director of Soikro. Myself is Curtis Johnson. I'm the public relations officer of Soikro. Thank you very much, Chair, for allowing us this huge opportunity to be here this morning and briefly present. Give one really the sense that this is the parliament for the people. We feel free and we appreciate it very much. Given the time that we have, Chair, and
can you speak to the mic?
Oh, sorry, Chair. I didn't want to use my preacher voice. Given the limitation that we have, Chair, with the time, and also not to be able to present from the screen, I think we have documents in front of us here, where I will just quickly run through, and Mr. Tim Woodendahl will also be here to further in detail explain, not to waste any further time. Chair, Soikro is an agricultural company. Since 1988, we are not just a agriculture company that springs out from nowhere. We have technical manuals out on all the products that we are producing, biological inoculant products. We're busy with science and products that we produce for agricultural purposes. Here's a specific manual of soya beans in 2012. All the principles that goes along with it, how to plant it and how to properly use it. Mr. Tim Odendaal will also further explain on that. We have a specific manual on biological potato productions where we reduce chemicals. It's unique in the world, the first of its kind. There's no other agricultural company that produce this inoculants other than the soy grow. Here we have a manual on lucerne that can make a big impact in industry. In 2016, biological programs are developed on basically all of the crops. Here's a manual of inoculants on wheat. Later, Mr. Odendaal will also show the difference between farmers that are using our biological products that we offer to them and those that are using chemicals, the difference between the two. And it will be clear to see that the ones that we are offering are the ones that are very, very much working. Productive development milestones that we have. From 1988, we have started to produce biological inoculants. We have started with the Molly Flow series. 1991, we have the soya, dry beans, groundnuts. Going down, you can see every year basically we have came up with the product that we have produced and that are well used on the market, up to where we are with the vision of in 2020, where we want to come up with the Red Fox inoculant. Now the Red Fox inoculant, it's a super inoculant. We call it a monster inoculant. With it on maize and wheat, we can easily produce from 500 kilogram to 1,000 kilogram. That is what we can produce. We are a company with a vision. We develop unique products. Biological principles, you can see from 1995 we have started to develop new principles such as the rhizophia inoculant. It is not just the old rhizobium. In 2000 we have already started with biological programs on all crops, and our vision in 2020 is to produce biological nitrogen on maize and wheat, which will be a great breakthrough, and we will have the ability to fertilize lesser nitrogen. Here we show you the biological program on potatoes. Here's five products that we do during planting. These products also have combinations on inoculants. There's a specific noses and guidance that we are using. We have five listed there. It is not just to use, but as you can see, there's five products that we have there that we use for that. Here's an example of a biological program on leaves. from planting to harvesting? Are we applying biological, what chemicals or without chemicals? There's a specific doses on dry land and industry. On maize is one of our biggest milestones on developing inoculants. We can today easily produce 10 to 20% on maize. It gives us 1,000 kilogram per hectare. So on inoculants, so on 2 million, we talking about 2 million ton. More maize just on using more inoculants without planting more hectares. So we can reduce the hectares with this kind of a product that we are coming up with. In 1997, we had a USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, that came all the way from America to South Africa in the northwest, in Potchefstroom at Soikoro, where we are based, for a 100 days period, where they came to test our product, the biological product that we are busy with. They were literally camping there at our place there, just to come and see. And here's a diagram here, as you can see, out of all the liquid inoculants tested, it was the ones of the Soikoro that stood out. There we have our own developed tanks that we have there that farmers can use the product with, that we have developed. We have also made a unique spiral mixer that can mix 600 to 700 bags of seed per day. This is an agricultural revolutionary that we are busy with in the Northwest province. In our backyard in the country, we are the first of its kind. Here we have the 2020 with Red Fox move us from 6 to 7 ton where we stand already. We can easily increase another ton of wheat. Honorable members, we would like to place it to the committee that we want to be part and parcel in the solutions of agriculture. Soikoro, we want to raise up our hands and respond to the call of the president and say, Tuma Mina, steer ons, we are here, and our product is one of the best. It is tested. However, we are producing from, we are exporting to Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and it is just in our own country where we need really the support and the department to stand behind us and to support us and see how best we can work together. Thank you very much. I would now give over to Mr. Tem Woodendown.
Honorary members, Mrs. Secretary, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I'm the director of Soikoro. I started Soikoro in 1988. So this is a new direction, biological products. In these days, it was only chemicals which was available in South Africa. When you go to the university, colleges, you only learn about chemicals. The biologicals was just in the background. In these days, and even today, they only have rhizobium, the inoculants for legume plants available. They think about that, they educate the students about that. About all the other biologicals, there is no education in South Africa. Soil scientists was basically unavailable in the whole country. Turn over the page, you will see the product list. We have 57 different products. So it is not just rhizobium anymore. It is not one or two products. That's a whole range of biologicals for all the crops available in South Africa. Turn over. When we come to legume inoculants, this is basically the food for students, for the universities. As I said, everything was around legume inoculants. When you look at the air here in front of us,
78% is nitrogen. It is basically free, and this is what I want to show you today. The free nitrogen we can use in South Africa, which is not at this stage fully utilized. You know, when we came to maize inoculants for maize and wheat, I went to Israel, and that professor, after a few years, I brought him to South Africa, and I said, "Professor, I just want to thank you very much for the help you have given us." And then after the day when he left, he told me, he said, "You know, Tim, I have worked for 20 years already. What you have shown me was to place it in practice." But he knew it from 1970 already. So what I'm going to present to you is not magic science. It's not something that I invented. The literature was actually full of it. 1888, they started with biologicals already in the world. 1898, the first patent was patented on wheat. But in 100 years after that, South Africa don't know that you can harvest biological nitrogen for wheat and meat and maize and papayas and sugarcane. Nobody knows it in South Africa. Turn over. You will see this soybean land. There is control on the left. You can see it is nearly... Do you all have it in front of you? The field of soybeans, the rows of soybeans. On the left, you will see the control... Sorry, sir. This one. You have to look here. Otherwise, you're going to lose the lecture.
I'm the only one who chairs. Talk to me. My guest. You are my guest.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah. Leave everybody there. Yeah. Talk to me.
Yeah. So on the left, you will see the control. The field is very poor. On the right, you see the soybeans grows very nice. So it's green. So this is only this was planted on one of the top farmers in South Africa. He fertilized well. So it's a top farm. He was the farmer of the year. So it's not a poor field. So on the left it's only chemical fertilizer. On the right you will see the biological inoculant. And this is to show you what nitrogen, biological nitrogen can do on the field. This is what may happen. When you turn over, look at the maize. You will see a soybean field on top and a maize on the bottom. On the left, on the soybeans, left above, you will see it's only fertilizers. This soybean field was planted with rhizobium 3 years ago. So this is what old inoculants can do. On the right, it's only the only way it is fresh inoculant. This is the difference on a soybean field. So what is important here, on the left, if you don't have it something to compare to the right, there is no problem. It is green, there is nodules, everything is in there. But on the right, you can show the effect of biological nitrogen fixation. On the soybean field on the left, on the maize field on the bottom, the whole field was planted with fertilizers. On that farm, all the fertilizer companies in South Africa was invited there. So on the left, you will see only fertilizer after 5 years. On the right, it's the same fertilizer, only the biologicals added to it. So you can see the field is much more improved. And what I want to tell you, if you go to South African research, you will see all research is done on chemicals only. Like Dr. Marcelina and Natalia have done for the department and the ARC in later years, very good work. That is reference work on fertilizers he has done. But what he has done, he has only inoculated a soybean. But the maize, they did not inoculate. So when you go to look at all the fertilizer trials in South Africa, it's crop rotation, it was soybean, maize rotation, and fertilized. You will get the wrong impression because the maize was never inoculated. So when you go to the top left on a soybean, if you don't inoculate it, you will see
the yield is going down, down, down every year. Because it's old inoculant, it's wild strains, it's not the fresh inoculant you see on the right. The same with the maize. If you don't inoculate the maize, you are only on the left. And this is where South Africa is at the moment. This is what we would like to stress you, honorable members of agriculture. We are way backwards. We are 100 years back. Because you can utilize biological fertilizer, cost effective, create a lot of jobs in South Africa. And what Mr. Johnson told here, I believe you are from the EFF. But you can use a lot. We can produce 2 million tons more maize. So we can use less land for maize and use it for other purposes for food security, if you want to. Turn over. To save you some time.
Can you summarize? You're left with 2 minutes.
Sorry?
You are left with 2 minutes.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. When you go to the back, you will see some horses, different crops and horses. When we look at soybean, you will see. I did a survey on myself. I asked some co-ops, people involved in South Africa with agriculture, some farmers, and I asked if you have an input of 1 rand in your farm, say planting maize or any crop, what do you get back? And the average farmer answered me about 1.50 rand. And that I presented, so in front of the co-op, they say, no, you are dead wrong. So in the case of wheat, we only get 22 cents back for each rand we invested in wheat. When you look at this page here, you will see we have for soybean, every bag of soybean is inoculated. You get 6 rands back for each 1 rand you invest. But in the case of other crops, like potatoes, you get 21 rand back. In the case of maize and wheat, 10 rand back. In the case of sugar bean, 12 rand. So I want to leave it with you there. You can later carry on, but this is what I want to present to you. It is very highly economical, and it is really something we have to look at in South Africa, in agricultural South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, a question? If there's any question, Honorable Steyn, Honorable Paulsen, Honorable Madena.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you to the presenters. I would like to find out if you have an idea of what percentage of our farmers are currently using inoculants. And if from those farmers that are using it, what percentage of the yield increase it was for certain products. If you have a broad answer on that, I don't know if you would have it. Thank you.
Thank you. If you go to soybean.
Honorable Paulson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to our two presenters for the presentation. I'd like to know the long-term impact of inoculants on soil quality, and also the quality of the food. I mean, I think the quality and food safety aspect is as critical. So I'd like to know what sort of research or testing was done to make sure or tell us that no impact on soil quality, food is still safe for humans. You know, you won't, because there's an amazing change in human biology because of the quality of food, where we are using feeding cattle growth hormones and also the soil and fertilizer that we use that pass on to the human to the human biology. So I think those are critical things here. It's very good if you can get a better yield, but what is the long-term impact of having a better yield? Okay, it's no use getting more, but you pay in the long term. So I want evidence that it's safe for humans, the food, and our food, soil quality is going to remain the same. I mean, I prefer organic farming, so unfortunately, it seems as outdated as everything else. So I don't know whether it's the right way to go to use biologicals, which is still chemicals, still processed. Not natural. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Mandela.
No, thank you, Chair. My questions in relation to the implications, safety issues have been asked, Chair. I don't want to repeat it. Thank you.
Honorable Malus.
From your presentation, it appears as though you have done this work or this research on your own. What is your relationship with the ARC? Have you interacted with them and what is the situation? Secondly, and what is your relationship with the Department of Agriculture? Are you working there alone without interacting with anybody and so on, or what is the situation? You are saying to us that other African countries, particularly in SADC, they are using your products, except South Africa. What is the problem? Thanks, Chair.
You can respond, sir. You can respond.
Thank you, ma'am. The percentage use of inoculants in South Africa, when you go to soya bean, every bag of seed planted is inoculated. Absolutely 100%. When you go to maize, about only 3.5%. This is my estimate because we're selling the only maize inoculant in South Africa. When you go to even the other, when you go to Lucerne, I will say about 80%. When you go to dry beans, basically 10%, and that's the contribution of the dry bean producers organization who advocate not to use biologicals because they do not understand it. And this is the reason what I said. The reason why they don't use it in South Africa is nobody is educated at universities on biologicals, only rhizobium. And even the rhizobium they do not understand properly. Question number two, about the quality and long-term impact, sir. When you have looked, you can go back again, you can look at the maize where on the left we only use the chemicals, on the right we use the biologicals. That was used for 5 years in consecutive. Yes, we use biological plus chemical fertilizer. So the long term you will see the impact is really good on soil fertility because the first thing that the inoculate do, it improves the root system. So what you see on the top of the soil, you see below the soil. You have more roots, more nitrogen for the next year. And all the other nutrients, NPK, micronutrients is more available to the crop for the next year. About food safety, if you would like to look at bacteria, you know, you say it's not natural. It is natural. When we have made superior selections, so this is the, if you want to go natural to the basic stage, then you have the wild races which will not produce and have food for the and you will have less food security. About the safety, sir, this is question number three. I think two and three have you brought up the safety question. If you want to look at bacteria, you will forbid any chicken in South Africa because the Minister of Health, I think in January, was on a television. And he mentioned to us all the diseases in the hospitals. That's E. coli, Clostridium, Shigella, Salmonella in the hospital. That's what was increasing diseases in hospitals. All of these is coming in
in chicken farms. In every chicken shed, you will get one or all of these in every chicken shed. And then most importantly, they use low dosages of antibiotics in the chicken farms. And so it increases the resistance. After 30 days, they slaughter it, they wash the shed, they disinfect it, but they cannot disinfect the whole chicken or the whole shed. So there is always some places where some bacteria will survive. So every generation, after 10 years, you can imagine how 10 times 12, 120 generations in 10 years. So the resistance of these bacteria is very dangerous. My family, we do not eat any chicken because it's produced in sheds. It's very dangerous and it's not, it should be prohibited in, actually, if you look at this in this case, for food security. The IRC, sir, you want to know what is my... I worked in the IRC. I was a soybean breeder in South Africa. But unfortunately, I worked many years with these. You can, if you want to know what is the relation of the knowledge of this stuff in... You can phone anybody, say, in case of my somebody working with, let's say, a disease like Visarium. Phone somebody at the IRC and ask him, what does he think? And he will say, no, it doesn't work. Because the IRC, all these people, unfortunately, they are educated at the universities. They are chemically orientated. The mind is in chemicals. So they want to kill something. This is the reason why Temik was allowed in South Africa, the most poisonous product in the world. So it is banned now worldwide, but in South Africa, it is allowed. Because it kills something. And then you will see, when you go to the IRC, they work on 95% surety when they do statistics. How can you work on 95%? 95% sure that this poison will kill something, it means this is a very dangerous poison. This is why it's allowed, and this is what is our problem with the Department of Agriculture also, Act 36, 1947. You know, all these companies coming, the multinationals coming into South Africa, these multinational companies, they produce a product, they sell it worldwide, in the whole world. So they can afford to do a lot of analysis on this product. But when they land it here in South Africa is a dumping ground for a lot of poisonous chemicals in the world. So they dump a lot of chemicals here in South Africa, and this is our problem with them. But a company like Swigro, creating jobs in South Africa, we cannot compete with these companies. We cannot have all these regulations on us, and this is what is our problem with the Department of Agriculture. Sir, to come back to your question, in 2012 we wrote letters to the IR, to the Department of Agriculture, Act 36, 1947. They did not answer us, and I have the letters with me. I will present it to you on a later stage. Several times we wrote to the registrar, he did not come back to us. You can phone the office, he did not come back to us. This is what is our problem with the Department of Agriculture. These people, it seems to us, they are not interested to do their work, or either they are not interested to contact with us in the field. Thank you, ma'am.
Maybe it's proper that I must introduce the minister is next to you. This minister. Okay. And the deputy minister next to the minister, acting DG. So you have the full house of agriculture. So. So the. I think the unfortunately we don't have much more time. We hope the department will develop an interest and interact with yourself further, discuss all those issues and see how we help South Africa. Indeed, we want people with solutions, and we appreciate that we had message of the president and lend your hand. Thank you very much. Minister? Minister, no, I'm not.
Yes, sir. I hope that the department has met with Soicro and has given them the line to take, because before we can work with anybody, we must make sure that they comply